From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is under fire once more, this time for her interview on 60 Minutes. The charter school proponent was unable to articulate clear answers to host Leslie Stahl's questions about underperforming schools, particularly in her home state of Michigan. DeVos's interview came days after her embarrassing visit to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, where the most recent high-profile mass shooting took place, claiming 17 lives. DeVos had met with only three students and even stopped to pet a dog on camera. Survivors of the shooting were deeply disappointed by her appearance. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has backed off from his earlier assertions about wanting to raise the gun purchasing age and has dug his heels in about his NRA talking point to arm teachers. His about-face comes as Florida passes a bill that includes arming some teaching staff. But as teachers in West Virginia and now possibly Oklahoma and Arizona have shown, what they really want and need are better working conditions and wages rather than guns. My guest is Kevin Kumashiro, former dean of the School of Education at the University of San Francisco, a leading expert on educational policy, school reform, teacher preparation, educational equity, and social justice. He's also the education correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
It's great to be here, Sonali.
Let's start with the latest news first with Betsy DeVos and her embarrassing interview on 60 Minutes. And I mentioned one part of her interview. We'll be playing that in just a moment. But overall, she just seemed hugely unprepared. One imagines that the head of the education department should at the very least appear educated. And she seemed not to. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, it's disappointing that our top leader seems unfamiliar with so much of the reality of education. But I will say that one thing that shined brightly in that interview, if that's the right metaphor, one thing that stood out in that interview very clearly was, when she was appointed. She was appointed because she was a champion of expanding school choice, charter schools, and vouchers, not only in Michigan, but pushing for it around the country. And that was what she stood on. That was what she said she would be bringing to the department. And that indeed is what she has been pushing for. And I think the fact that so much of the interview revolved around her referencing, the work that she was trying to do in Michigan and how that was a model for what we should be doing around the country, I don't think is surprising. I think what is perhaps more surprising is her inability to grapple with the research that shows us that the reforms that she was pushing so hard for in Michigan, using her own wealth to leverage those changes for about a decade, has actually made education in Michigan far worse, far more inequitable, and far less effective for the children who struggle the most than what she's willing to admit. And I think the interesting point about her not even visiting low performing schools in Michigan is very telling, right? That she's very unfamiliar with the reality that these reforms are actually not working, which, by the way, I think gets to one of the really big underlying messages that we don't talk a lot enough about, which is that these reforms aren't often designed to make schools better. They are designed to fuel the profiteering off of public education.
Well, let's actually watch a clip of Betsy DeVos's interview on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. We'll start with Ms. Stahl asking her the question.
Why take money away from that school that's not working to bring them up to a level where they are, that school is working?
Well, we should be funding and investing in students, not in school buildings, not in institutions, not in systems.
And okay, but what about the kids who are back at the school? It's not working. What about those kids?
Well, in places where there is a lot of choice that's been introduced, Florida, for example, the studies show that when there's a large number of students that opt to go to a different school or different schools, the traditional public schools, actually, the results get better as well.
Now, has that happened in Michigan? We're in Michigan, this is your home state.
Yes. Well, there's lots of great options and choices for students here.
Have the public schools in Michigan gotten better?
I don't know overall. I can't say overall that they have all gotten better.
The whole state is not doing well.
Well, there are certainly lots of pockets where the students are doing
no,
well.
But your argument that if you take funds away, that the schools will get better is not working in Michigan, where you had a huge impact and influence over the direction of the school system here.
I hesitate to talk about all schools in general because schools are made up of individual students attending them.
The public schools here are doing worse than they did.
Michigan schools need to do better. There is no doubt about it.
Have you seen the really bad schools? Maybe try to figure out what they're doing.
I have not intentionally visited schools that are underperforming.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. Yes.
Betsy DeVos admitting to Leslie Stahl after she was asked whether she had visited underperforming schools. Betsy DeVos said, I have not intentionally visited schools that are underperforming, and then added, well, maybe she should. Kevin Kumashiro, one of the things that she started out in that clip saying, which is really interesting, she said, we should be investing in students, not in buildings, not in systems, not in the system as a whole. How do you respond to that? Because, of course, students are learning within a system. They aren't these individual units of learning all by themselves, right?
Yeah, I thought that that message so captures this ideology that we seem steeped into, what sometimes is called neoliberal ideology, which is all about the individual. And if we can simply support individuals in being competitive, that's actually going to fix everything, rather than recognizing that it's not just individual effort and capacity, it's also whether or not the systems that they work in are broken or not broken, right? And I think the more we focus on either blaming individuals or empowering individuals, the more we are unable to recognize that our solutions might never work because they're not getting at these much deeper problems in education. Right? You can have a school where everyone is, all the teachers are very hardworking, all the parents are committed, and it might still be a struggling school because of all the other things like inequitable funding or segregation and racism or a climate of bullying and harassment and on. So if we don't talk about these larger issues and connect the dots, we're actually fueling the problem.
And it's interesting that Betsy DeVos would like us to believe that all of the money that government has poured into public schools has not made a difference. She said, we have invested billions and billions and billions of dollars from the federal level, and we've seen zero results. And Leslie Stahl sort of took issue with that, saying, no, that's not true. And this is part of that myth, right, Kevin, where for some reason, when it comes to private schools or anything that rich people benefit from, more money is always better. You know, we pay corporate CEOs more money because money attracts talent. However, when it comes to schools, suddenly, magically, we don't see any return on investment. There's no, you know, money doesn't make any difference to them.
It's amazing, right? If we were to compare the highest performing schools with the struggling school, if we were to compare the highest performing schools with the reforms that we're hoisting onto the struggling schools, we would see a huge hypocrisy and contradiction, right? Because the highest performing schools actually have well-compensated and supported teachers. They have fully stocked laboratories. They have buildings that are not falling apart and covered in mold. They have facilities for all kinds of learning like music and athletics. They have updated textbooks, and the list can go on and on, right? Money doesn't solve all of our problems, but the reality is that money matters in education, and resourced schools is incredibly, incredibly vital for students to be able to succeed. So the notion that we can improve schools by not actually touching funding or even by gutting funding, which is happening in the Trump proposed budget, while simply saying, oh, if we can just make everyone try harder and compete, that's actually going to make things better, that is so missing the boat in terms of what actually is happening and what actually is going wrong with public schools today.
But back to this issue of how her wanting to focus on the individual rather than systems. She said, I hesitate to talk about all schools in general because schools are made up of individual students attending them. And this is very much the sort of individualistic, conservative approach to politics, personal responsibility over systemic change. Let's look at, you know, and on the left and more liberal Americans want to look at the systems and how they work and how individuals work within systems rather than basing everything on individual and personal responsibility. You can't fund a public education in the way that Betsy DeVos thinks that we should, because otherwise the federal government would be handing out personal funds to every individual student who would then what, go shopping around for their education at the best private school.
And doesn't it seem that that's exactly what they're moving towards, right? Whether it's tax credits or voucher programs, that really this is about dismantling a public education system that some think of as too expensive or too looks too socialist, right? And fuel a private enterprise where everyone can shop for themselves. And what we there's lots of research that actually speaks against that, right? Such as the notion that vouchers don't often allow us to afford the top performing private schools anyway. They're not substantial enough, even if we wanted to move in that direction. In other words, it wouldn't work. But even if it were enough money to fund tuition to a private school, that actually moves us away from a vision of what public education is supposed to be all about, right? This isn't just a marketplace where those who have should be able to afford to buy the best education that money can offer. To me, public education, and not just to me, I would argue, many people would argue that public schools are a bedrock. They're kind of a foundation of a democratic society, that we become a stronger nation together if all are being educated equitably and effectively. And that's not going to happen the more that we build a system that guarantees that some are winning when a whole bunch of others are losing. Mm.
Kevin, I want to quote for you and our audience what one of the survivors of the Parkland shooting, Cameron Caskey, tweeted to DeVos after the 60 Minutes interview aired. Cameron Caskey said, "Everybody please give Betsy DeVos a break in regards to the education, the 60 Minutes video. Answering questions about education is hard. It's unfair to put the United States Secretary of Education on the spot like that." He then added, just so you guys know, that was a drop of or two of sarcasm in there. And then he said, "Everyone, please stop saying Betsy DeVos isn't qualified for her job. I bet none of you have enough money to buy that position anyway. So please allow the secretary to do her good work without your criticism." You know, he was really on point to this. And it really seems as though in these days, the students around school shootings who have been speaking up are dropping so much more wisdom than the adults. And then the teachers, such as those in West Virginia, are showing us in their actions what they need most of all. What do you make of what this young student had to say and about DeVos's embarrassing visit to Parkland?
Yeah, I love when students are able to nail on the head what is really going on, right? With such clarity and with such humor as well. I think it's important to name that a lot of what's going on is not finding the most qualified people, but finding people who philosophically, ideologically are going to push forward on certain kinds of proposals that benefit, in this case, the most wealthy. I think the visit to Parkland should have been an opportunity to say that we as a nation, and particularly we in the federal government, if I were the secretary, that's how I would have phrased it, are highly committed to coming up with systemic and effective solutions to trying to address the epidemics in our country. And, you know, the same thing could have been said if she were to have visited teachers in West Virginia. I could imagine a similar kind of show where it's really about photo ops rather than about making a very symbolic and important statement about the kinds of commitments we want to be making, both in terms of policy and in terms of funding. And the reality is that I don't think she had much to say, even if she wanted to, or even if she knew more in Parkland, because the position of the federal government right now is not moving us in the right direction, right? We're not tackling gun control. And even if we were, I think many would argue that legislation around access to purchasing guns is really one part of what must be seen as a much larger package of initiatives that we need to take if we're going to address the system, right? School shootings so often, or mass shootings, school shootings, so often we talk about it in really narrow ways. We're not talking, for example, about how there's school shootings happening in urban contexts all the time, but they don't make the news. We're not talking about how mass shootings and domestic violence, by the way, that leads to death by guns, how these are highly, you're far more likely to be a perpetrator if you're connected to either the military or the police force. We're not talking about a culture of violence and violent masculinity. We're not talking about a culture of that really glorifies violence, both domestically and abroad. And I think that if we were to connect the dots, we would be able to come up with more broad and systemic solutions that are going to have far more likelihood of solving the problem rather than simply saying, well, this person is evil or this person was mentally ill. And therefore, the way we actually make the problem go away is we do what was making the problem exist in the first place, which is we make our schools even more sites of even more potential violence. Right. We're seeing a response to violence with more violence. Right.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So, I mean, if we want to really like put this in a nutshell, legislators, Donald Trump are basically saying, oh, we have a problem of guns entering schools. Let's fix it by putting more guns in schools. I mean, it's Orwellian.
It's absolutely unbelievable. A, what makes us think that that's a deterrent, right? The reason people are drawn to these kinds of very public acts is because of the confrontational nature. I mean, I think that's one of the aspects of it. So having more guns in schools doesn't make people, isn't necessarily going to be a deterrent. But let's also get back to the root cause. I mean, this reminds me of some of the wonderful work that was coming out decades ago about what the CIA has known for a long time, which is that U.S. perpetuated violence around the world generates responses. It's called blowback, right? Which is often violent responses towards the U.S. that is in resistance to the harm that the U.S. is causing around the world. But the problem with those of us in the U.S. when we see this is we don't recognize that this is a pushback against the U.S. We think that it's evil people attacking the goodness that we are. And so we're because we're blinded by what caused the violence in the first place, we then say, all right, our solution must be to be even a bigger bully and to exert even more military violence around the world, right? We did violence, violence is being done back to us, and now we're going to respond with even more violence. And you can argue that a very parallel kind of conversation or chain of events is happening when we think about the way we make schools safer is we increase policing, which also, by the way, is linked with militarism. We arm teachers who are probably not trained and shouldn't be carrying guns anyway. Like, that's not their job. And so why then is that the solution? Well, it makes sense, right, given the narrative that we follow or that we tell ourselves about who we are and what causes the problem, but it absolutely does not make sense once we begin to connect the dots about what is really causing gun violence in
and
this country.
Kevin, the issue of funding is so critical here. Donald Trump, the White House has said that the federal government will attach funds to very serious training so that teachers are armed. Here is the government saying that they will pour money into training teachers and the use of guns while teachers are on the streets striking for higher wages because they're simply not paid enough. I look at this as a slap in the faces of teachers.
It's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, just one more note about gun violence, by the way, is that one of the things we know is even police officers who are highly trained in how to use these weapons are often misusing the weapons. It's leading to great harm and violence and death because they're trained in how to use the weapons, maybe even more than they need to be trained in how to de-escalate tension, right? And so arming teachers with using guns isn't necessarily, again, getting at what we really need to be doing, which is understanding how we de-escalate tension, how we decrease discrimination and other kinds of violence. But absolutely, then let's contextualize how we want to spend our money, right? Really, in this moment, when teachers around the country are being galvanized to protest the lack of investment in the teaching profession, we're going to throw money in a solution that actually has no research backing at all. I think that's why it's so exciting to see the West Virginia teachers, who are arguably are inspiring other teacher groups around the country, to say we've had enough. You know, West Virginia, 48th lowest average teacher salaries in the nation. Some people look at that and they say, well, some of these states are not expensive to live in, And that's probably true. It's not as expensive as, say, New York, Manhattan. But the reality is that being ranked isn't what's the problem. Ranking low isn't the problem. What teachers will tell us is the problem is that everyone they know has to take on second and third jobs because the salary simply isn't enough to live on, right? And at the same time, they're pulling out of their pocketbooks to fund classroom materials because there's not enough money going into the schools either. Right.
Right. And now they might be expected to, if the government has their way, carry guns or be trained in guns, or if not, have to work in an environment where there are more possibly guns floating around. You know, teachers die too in mass shootings.
Right. Who would want to do that? I mean, I saw an interview with Trump saying that he, if he were there, he would have dashed into that school and tried
I would love to see that.
Teachers are there to teach, and schools are there to be places of learning and of growing. And that's what we need to be focusing on, right? Not how we further militarize these institutions.
So, Kevin, what is the impact that you think the West Virginia strike, which was illegal and successful, might have on other teachers in other states? You said it's arguably that it might be inspiring other strikes. We've heard in Oklahoma, teachers have given their district the deadline of April 2nd to come up to meet their demands. Arizona teachers are gearing up, are very unhappy about their working conditions. And we know that, especially in the era of social media, the power of symbolism, you know, what these West Virginia teachers showed was possible, that when they all stood, you know, side by side, shoulder to shoulder in solidarity and brought the system to a standstill, they can get the things that they desperately need and have been asking for nicely for a very long time. Could this spark a movement of teachers around the country, or is that too optimistic?
I think we're already seeing a spark around the country. There's no doubt that teachers in places like Arizona and Oklahoma and elsewhere talk about what happened in Virginia as a source of inspiration. And I think this absolutely is an example of collectivization, right? In both instances, it's the masses that are pushing back not only against official school systems and the state, they're also pushing back against their own unions, right? In both instances, we saw the masses actually saying that they disagree with the union leadership and they want to move forward with much more public action and the work stoppages. I think what we're seeing is not only a sense of empowerment for collectives, we're also seeing a commitment to reframing the public debate, that what teachers are also insisting on is that we not see this as individual teachers being greedy for more, but educators being committed to improving education, right? You can't have good learning conditions without good teaching conditions. And if we're underfunding all aspects of education, which is actually arguably happening, you know, how can teachers actually be successful at that? Look, for example, at what's happening in Arizona, right? The social media campaign was brilliant because compensation was actually only one of the things that they were talking about. It's echoing, by the way, what we saw in Chicago back in 2012 when they led this very successful strike. When they went in front of the media, they were not only talking about compensation, they were talking about how the underfunding of education is leading towards classes that are too large, supports services that are being underfunded and therefore not being provided. And the list goes on and on, right? They were saying that public education is being decimated, and that's why we need to be rallying and speaking up. I love the reframing. I think it's absolutely right on. And I look forward to seeing where these kinds of mobilizations take us next.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you so much for joining us, as always, to discuss all of these issues. And I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Kumashira is a former dean of the School of Education at the University of San Francisco. He's a leading expert on educational policy, school reform, teacher prep, and educational equity and social justice. He's also our education correspondent. We've been discussing Betsy DeVos, the idea of arming teachers, and teacher strikes. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.